Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
710 ESPN, Mesa in Ireland. Here's what we're talking about. We've been talking for the last hour about the idea that the NBA is moving closer to returning at Disney World this summer. So we've got that story going on. Meanwhile, Scott Boras is coming on the show. Scott is, of course, baseball super agent, and he's going to update us on where we are in terms of getting the game of baseball to kick off this summer.
And Scott should get some credit if and when this happens, because he was one of the first people who came out and encouraged everybody to get their heads around whether or not we could have a season this year. Remember, there were a lot of people saying, just cancel all sports.
Yes.
A lot of people still feel that way. You know, cancel all sports. But a lot of people, you know, Bill Plotchke wrote a column, sports are dead in 2020.
It's all over. Sports it's all over. It's done.
And Scott said, wait a minute. Look at the history of baseball. Look at the history of our country. And look at how baseball has helped heal some things and get us out of certain situations, whether it be after a military conflict or helping break the color barrier or coming back after 9/11. Sports leads the way a lot of times in situations like these. Thank God we haven't had too many of them.
Yep.
But I'm excited to talk to Scott and figure out how we can make this happen. Now, the thing Mason and I have been frankly hemming and hawing on is who should give more. Should the players automatically say, look, you don't have to pay us our full salaries, we'll agree to a 50-50? Should the owners just say, look, we're all billionaires, we'll pay you your full salaries, let's just get the season in here? Should it be a compromise where they both give a little? Mace, where are you at on that now?
I am on the side of the players. I'm not sure if they should take a haircut or not, but they should get a prorated amount of their salary, an 82 games worth of
salary.
Let me ask you
a hard one.
Yeah.
If a player, and you and I both agree that a player absolutely should have the right not to come in if he doesn't want to, should that player be paid?
It's a good question. I would say, boy, if he's not playing for safety reasons, that's a really tough question.
Right. We can throw it at Scott.
We'll throw it at Scott.
But the situation is, you know, I think Blake Snell did more harm than good by
making his whole
presentation about money.
Yep.
And I don't think Blake Snell's a bad guy. And I actually think if you take his points that he made, a lot of them are worthy of discussion. Are decent points to talk about. You know,
Twitch was the wrong forum to do it. You don't do it while you're playing video games.
And you don't just say it's all about money.
Right.
It's not all about money. It's a lot of it is, but it's not all about money. And that makes it different.
And it's important to point out that at this moment, there has not been an offer from the owners to the players on how much the players would make. What baseball is moving towards, it seems, is a spring training that would start in June and baseball then by the 4th of July. That was cleared, by the way, earlier this week when Governor Abbott in Texas, Governor Newsom in California, and Governor Cuomo in New York all said that professional sports could be good to go as soon as June the 1st, which means that the Dodgers, although no fans would be there, would be able to play in Dodger Stadium, Angels in Angel Stadium, Yankees at Yankee Stadium, with obviously strict safety precautions in place. And baseball has released this 67-page safety manual that includes stuff like don't spit your sunflower seeds and wear your uni to the ballpark, and you don't take a shower after the game. You just go home and take your shower at home. Stuff like that that baseball is recommending. How much of that flies, how much of that is realistic, remains to be seen, but that's at least what baseball is doing in terms of trying to meet health standards in coming back from this COVID-19 crisis.
By the way, I got a note from somebody that said, we are underestimating, not necessarily you and me, but just people in general are underestimating how difficult it's going to be for some of these players to quit spitting.
Oh, yeah.
You buying that? That it's going to be hard?
100%. Man, that's a habit. They've been playing that game for a long time.
Well, it's like telling somebody to quit smoking cold turkey. You know, you can tell them to do it, but a lot of people just can't.
Gabe Kapler, who's managing the Giants, said this up on radio in San Francisco. When the game begins, I start with some coffee. It's part of my routine. I quickly transition to gum, lots of gum, not just a couple of pieces, a lot of gum. I don't like the sweetness, but I like the size of the gum. My normal behavior is I spit a lot of the gum juice out. From there, I transition to seeds, sunflower seeds, in the middle of the game, as much as you can fit in your mouth. You're just spitting the seeds on the ground. I'm not alone. So many players, staff have routines like the one I just described. Different, but similar. They're all going to have to stop these routines. That is going to be a tremendous challenge. And I think it probably is. If you've been playing the game for 20 years or 25 years from the time you're a little kid, baseball players spit. That's just something they do.
Well, and it's like any other habit.
Yep.
You know, it's people pay a lot of money to break habits. You know, people go to rehab for alcoholism. I mean, it's if you can't, they just can't stop on their own. So, I mean, some of these guys are. I wonder, do you think it will affect performance?
I don't. I think guys are going to do it and then realize I wasn't supposed to do it. And do it and realize I wasn't supposed to do it. And ultimately break the habit. I mean, let's face it, guys were able to break the habit of dip. So they should be able to break the habit of spinning.
Yeah, it's a whole new world. Okay, so what? Scott Boras, of course, is the world's leading baseball agent, and he's based in Newport Beach, although he has facilities all over the country that works with baseball players all over the world, really. And Scott's always nice enough when we reach out to give us a few minutes. Scott, we appreciate you doing this. How are you holding up?
I'm doing great. You know, we're kind of fortunate here in California where, compared to many other families that I talk to in the Northeast and certain other states. So I hope, you know, John, Steve, you and your family and your staff, they're all well.
All is good, Scott. Thank you very much. So where are we at this point? I mean, let me ask you this. Have the owners actually made an offer to the players to come back and play?
Well, remember, back in March, I really thought the owners and everybody involved, they got together once the spring training stopped and said, look, we need to create a partnership here. We had in the collective bargaining agreement, the owners had to provide 162 games and about $4.5 billion in salaries. And I think the players, certainly the players I represent, they understand the pandemic was no one's fault. And they got in and they worked a couple weeks and they made a compromise. And players agreed that the determination of if we play games is going to be made upon a good faith understanding and conversations between the union and Major League Baseball. And that whether it's economically feasible, we kind of knew that it would be because the TV contracts are right around a value of $4 to $5 billion a year, and if you played a little over half the season, you're talking about well over $3 billion. And there's a jewel for the owners because they don't have to split any of that, a lot of that money with the postseason with the players because that's solely theirs. So it really makes the game economically feasible for them. And there's also a provision in the agreement which stated what the players would be paid, and that would be they'd be paid on a pro rata basis per game. So it was a, you know, the parties got together, they negotiated, and in good faith, they all thought it was a good deal, and they both signed off on it. And, you know, as far as I know, that's the working operational dynamic. And then I think the parties now are having discussions about the protocol for health and safety and trying to move this forward.
We're talking to Scott Boras, and Scott, there's a bunch of little stuff that goes along with everything you just presented. Like Mason and I were just saying, as a hypothetical, let's say you have a player that for whatever reason doesn't feel safe. He just doesn't want to come back. He doesn't want to risk it. I certainly feel that that should be someone's prerogative if they don't want to risk their health and come back. But if they exercise that right, should that player be paid?
Well, I think the issue of that would be whether or not there is a, in the guarantee language of the contract, much like highly compensated radio personalities, there are provisions in there that state that if there is a medical issue or something other than choice or intent that would prevent the player from playing, then I would imagine that the guarantee, because there are provisions that state that the contract's guaranteed if there's medical dynamics related to the player, that, and it's not merely him not saying, I choose not to work, then the that scope would then be considered. But if a player just says, I voluntarily don't want to play, and there is no provision of the guarantee that would protect him with a contract, I would say that the prospect of you know, that he would understand that he would be pursuant to his guarantee language, that he would be forbearing the money of the contract.
Baseball super agent Scott Boras is with us, Mason, in Ireland, 710 ESPN. So I know you said there was an agreement back in March between the players and the owners. Where is this 50-50 revenue share talk coming from?
You know, I don't know. I've heard a lot about it. I've never heard anything about it from any of the players I represent who are involved with the union in the process. So it's just something that propped up. And keep in mind that Major League Baseball and the baseball players, we've had a long-standing history where, you know, defining what revenue is like defining how many galaxies there are in the in the universe. It's infinite, undefinable. And the point of it is that Major League Baseball teams, like you have the Atlanta Braves make $450 million, you know, 10 years later they're worth $1.8 billion. The Cleveland Indians are bought for $300 million. Now they're worth $1.1 billion. Or the Cubs were bought for $800 million. Now they're worth $3.2 billion. And we know because the Atlanta Braves are public record, they made $262 million in 2016, and they made $475 million in 2019. All those things are wonderful gains. And the rule of thumb is that you don't, you know, you really don't go and suggest to players that you privatize the gains and socialize the losses. Because for all those years, they're making billions. There was no suggestion of any revenue sharing concept.
Give back.
That's not how we did business. And so when you come in, you know, I own a company. I have 140 employees. I pay them. I don't lay any of them off. Obviously, the revenues of our business are grandly affected with the pandemic, but they're not owners of the company, and I don't expect them to bear the loss, as they have never expected me to provide them with the gains of the company that they don't own. So I think it's a very simple concept that we have a working relationship, we have a collective bargaining agreement, and I don't think you alter that dynamic that has existed for years by the mere fact that you're having an annualized a year. And to give you an idea, the Atlanta Braves are reported to have $312 million in their bank accounts from the operations of their season. So these teams are very profitable. The game is very healthy. There is a downturn, obviously, with the pandemic, but you know, we're going to be right back at it in 2021. And frankly, with the TV contracts, I don't see clubs not making money again in 2020, to be honest with you.
We're talking to Scott Boras. Scott, the report, the health and safety report that Major League Baseball provided, ESPN got a copy of it, and it's been out there, and I've assumed you've looked it over at least a little bit. Was there anything in there that concerned you, or do you agree with most of the health and safety suggestions that MLB was putting out there?
You know, protocols are like they're like building roads. You have yield signs, you have stop signs, but until you know the needs of the people that live on the road, and you just construct a road, you have to know both. And the medical health professionals are giving them their ideal world. But remember, we also have to have dynamics in there that relate to player safety from performance, their routines, what they do, what they need to go out there and provide a service without injury and protect their careers and everything. And the health professionals that design the initial steps of a protocol are really not familiar with any of that. Their total dynamic that they start the process with is what they deem to be the best possible scenario relative to the virus, without consideration of the fact that of what players need to remain healthy and to conduct the normalcy of their lives and their routines in an employment environment. So now Scott has gone public, understanding that both sides would sit down and discuss this and provide input to get sort of a final registration. And it's kind of what they did in Korea and Taiwan. They have a provision where we know how the players are in the dugout. We know what they do. They've been operating their league for, you know, almost 100 days, counting spring training and workouts. So we have a good model of what's worked well. And to my knowledge, there's been no players hospitalized. There's been a few players that have tested positive, but that's been controlled. And the league has operated very efficiently. So we have some helpful means, but I think, you know, they're in the process of building the structure of what those protocols would be.
Last thing for you, Scott. Bob Nightingale was on with us earlier this week and said he feels like it's 90-10 that we will have baseball by the 4th of July. What do you think?
Well, you know, I studied medicine and pharmacology, and what I'm going by and have gone by with this, because can you imagine what we were thinking 3 weeks ago, John and Steve?
Yeah, I know. It's crazy.
You know,
it's crazy.
When you think back of it, the medical professionals, and we have an amazing, brilliant medical professionals in immunology, serology, you know, pharmacology, where we are with the vaccines, where we are with the therapeutics, all those things, where we are with the testing. There's a whole new testing procedure that was going to be announced here in a matter of days. And so when we have all these things coming forward, it obviously makes the identification and the categorization of an employment environment much more specific and exact. And also the treatment of them, or our hospital and healthcare systems are now adjusted to this and available. We know so much more about the virus, and because of those factors, and the fact that a vaccine, they said, would be 2 years, now it's 1 year, and many of the medical professionals I talk to think it's going to be shorter than that, because the genome of the SARS back in the early 2000s was 96% like the genome of COVID-19. So they're way ahead in what they normally do in immunology, in figuring those things out. So I'm obviously medically much more positive about what we know, what we're able to do, very, very understood employment environment that allows an efficient game and efficient production of the game going forward. Boy, that was a long-worded answer to your question.
That's so okay, Scott.
Was that a yes or a no, 90-10, that we're at baseball by the 4th of July?
I would say that Bob is certainly more in line with what the medical professionals are saying. No question.
Okay. All right, good.
Sounds good.
Hey, Scott, thank you for making the time to do this. And it's very enlightening, and we hope we'll be talking to you next time about actual games on the field.
Well, you know, I'm out here in Newport Beach, and I can't tell you guys, you've given me a life preserver, because it's so nice to talk baseball with people.
Yeah, good. I hear you, man. I hear you.
All right, guys.
All right,
hey,
stay safe, Scott. See ya. He said something there that changed my entire thinking about this. I'll tell you what it is coming up. And also, I will reveal a John Ireland cultural blind spot.
Wow. Well, I can't wait for this.
All right,
that's coming up next for you, Mason and Ireland, 710 ESPN. Yeah. Big day. Thanks a lot for being out there and listening. It's Wednesday, and it is 4:20, people. Exactly 4:20.
How about
for those
that?
Of you that care. Ireland, something grabbed you out of the Scott Boras conversation. What was it?
Did you know? I didn't know until Scott said it.
Yep.
That the owners get all the playoff money and the players get zero?
Had no idea.
I mean,
I always thought they got like a share of it. Like
they
the share, and it went to the players.
Well, they get a World Series share if they make it and a larger one if they win it. But the TV money
all goes to the owners.
Oh.
Yep.
And he said the numbers that Scott ran by, and maybe I'm misunderstanding this because they do have like some of these baseball players make a ton of money, whether they're like Mike Trout makes a ton of money, whether the Angels make the playoffs or not.
Yes.
But he said that if they play half the season, he said that salaries in baseball cost about $4.5 billion.
Yep.
He said that if they play half the games, they make over $3 billion in revenue.
Playoff money.
No, revenue from the season.
Oh, from the season, yeah.
And then they go to the playoffs, which is all that a lot of like me, you guys, you and Lindsay are big, giant baseball fans.
Yep.
I might watch between 10 and 20 games during the regular season, but during the playoffs, I watch every game.
Yes.
I got to think that's a complete cash cow.
Oh,
and the argument that Scott made hit home with me that, you know, he said, I run a company with 140 employees. He said, I didn't fire any of them. I didn't furlough any of them. And because we're having a really bad year, I'm paying them anyway, and I'm taking it in the shorts.
Yep.
But when we had monster years, they didn't come to me and say, give me some of that.
Correct.
And he was, you know, I think he used the Braves as an example in how much money they go up every year. I've now moved over to where you are. I think that the arrangement that they worked out in March should be honored.
Yep. Prorated salary. Basically, it's 82 games worth of salary.
Right.
That to me seems reasonable, given that the owners get all the playoff money, all the TV money.
Yeah.
They get all the local regional money.
Now, it's still not what some of our most ardent listeners are suggesting, that they should just be paid their entire salary and nobody ask any questions. I understand why the players are willing to compromise here, but I don't think that, you know, I don't think 50-50 makes any sense anymore.
No, I don't either. I don't either. And yesterday I did, so that just goes to show you, my opinion is always evolving. Yesterday, yeah. I sent out the most strongly worded tweet, the players should play no matter what the deal is, and now I'm saying, no,
well,
they should get a prorated portion of their
salary.
You
are the definition of bipolar. You get it that way. Okay.
Well, no, but I'll tell you what, my mind was changed not just by Scott, but by the number of emails I got, by the number of tweets I got, by the number of responses I got, by two text messages I got from people who I know and respect. My opinion was changed by that stuff. Scott was kind of like the final piece of that. Players shouldn't take less. They're the ones that are taking the safety risk by actually playing. Owners are going to be sitting on their yachts, watching the value of their franchises go up, cashing big TV deal checks. So my opinion evolved, and it's pretty much 180 degrees from what it was yesterday.
Okay, so I now have to admit a cultural blind spot.
Uh-oh.
Lindsay sent us an email today.
Yep.
Asking if we want to have the guy on from The Sandlot who says, you're killing me, Smalls. What's that guy's name, Lindsay?
Oh, I'm looking it up right now. Okay, I should have been ready for this.
But it's the guy who has the most famous line in the movie. The guy that says, you know, you're killing me, Smalls.
It's
Patrick
Renna.
Okay.
Ding.
All right. I've never seen The Sandlot.
What?
Haven't seen it.
I don't even know you anymore.
I know that line because so many people have repeated it. But I've never, ever seen it. And for that reason.
You've never seen any parts, shapes, or form of it?
Zero.
You know nothing about it.
I know it's a baseball movie about kids. Normally I've seen every sports movie that there is.
Somehow, by the way, if you ask,
that one slipped through the cracks.
If you ask people, and that movie came out in 93. And I see every baseball. I actually see every movie. It doesn't matter to me. But that one I saw, like every other baseball movie. If you're of a certain generation, that's one of your top three baseball movies.
You've got to see that now.
Where does that rank for you, Lindsay?
That's probably my number one baseball movie. I'm trying to think of one that I like more than that.
Well, I mean, the funny thing is, I'm like Mason. Normally, if it's a sports movie, I'll go. I watched a sports movie with Matt LeBlanc and a baseball-playing chimp. It was the biggest piece of crap of all time.
Oh, yeah. That was
awful. I think it was called Ed. But I didn't. I somehow, for whatever reason, didn't see Sandlot and have somehow never come across it. You said it was made in 93. In 27 years of it being on cable.
Now you have an excuse to watch it.
It's completely up to you guys whether or not we have this guy on the show. If we schedule him, I will make a point of watching Sandlot so I'm just not a complete moron in the dark. But I haven't. If I'm just putting all my cards on the table, I've never seen it.
You're killing me, Smalls.
You'd love it, John. It's not just a baseball movie. It's just like a great coming-of-age classic movie. It's awesome. Yep.
It really is. I vote yes and make John see the movie.
Okay.
Well, I'll watch the movie even if we don't have the guy on. But if you guys both say it's good. You know, I'm a sucker for pretty much most baseball movies. Like, I liked Angels in the Outfield.
I loved Angels in the Outfield. That was Joey Gordon-Levitt, and I told him, I interviewed him years ago, and I told him I thought it was one of his best performances, and he just, like, look on his face, he was like, I didn't like that movie at all.
When Dave Singer was producing our show, the Angels were making a playoff run, and that the move from the movie where everyone's doing the halo,
the Angel Wings,
kind of took off at Angel Stadium, and so we asked for him, and the publicist got back to us with he didn't enjoy his experience on that movie, so he'll pass.
Oh my gosh, that's crazy!
Such a good movie too. It's such a good movie.
But I liked all the Major League movies, even 2 and 3, which most people didn't like.
Well, you will love The Sandlot, John.
You'll love it.
Let's go yes on Patrick Renna. You're killing me, Smalls. And, John, your homework is to watch The Sandlot.
All right, fair enough.
Cool.
In fact, watch it this weekend. It's a great Memorial Day flick.
Okay.
Absolutely. All right, coming up for you next, let's see, Jared Dudley was on a Zoom call. Today, a Zoom like press conference thing, and he said a bunch of interesting stuff that we haven't gotten to yet. We'll get to that. Plus, John, Lindsay asked me a really interesting question about us a couple of minutes ago, and I want to throw it at you next.
Okay,
Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN. All right, ESPN LA, Mason and Ireland. Boy, John, you were getting hammered on social media because you've never seen The Sandlot.
Well, I will rectify it. I will watch The Sandlot. If we're going to have that guy next week, I'll try and watch it this weekend.
Yeah, hey, you got to fix that.
Eric in Fountain Valley is online. Eric has been a loyal listener to Mason and Ireland, and I will preface this by saying that Eric and I email every once in a while, and he went through a battle with cancer that, frankly, it did not look good for a while. And and Funchess just mentioned he called the show. Eric, how are you doing? And most of all, welcome back. I know you've had a very unusual life and now you got the pandemic. How are you holding up?
I'm doing pretty well. First of all, I've never seen The Sandlot either.
Wow.
I will say one thing. I don't think there's any question what the greatest baseball movie of all time is, and that's A League of Their Own with the overlooked Oscar-winning performance by Angry Fan Number 3.
Oh, yes. Angry Fan Number 3 was so good in A League of Their Own. I'm glad you recognize that.
Yeah. You really steals the movie. Academy, and it's terrible, like Adam Sandler, and I think we should pick it in protest. So now, here's the thing. I go back with you guys a long way. Nation and Schwartz, when you guys were in San Diego.
Oh, wow.
You guys were down there with Sleprog, Judy Zabluski, and Dave What's-His-Face. So I go back a long way. And
that's great. Thank you, man.
Last year, and John knows this, last year and I was going through some pains, and I'm sorry to bore your 7 listeners. And it turned out I had cancer. I had stage 4 non-Hodgkin's. And I was told I would survive, and I was lucky if I had anything else, I wouldn't have. And so I reached out to friends and enemies and everybody, and I've known John, and we exchanged emails, and I did it. And he replied back, and the emails are between what was said. And when you have told you have cancer, you get a million thoughts go through your mind, of which at least 999,999 of them are bad. And as Vanessa Bryant's finding out now, you can't get through a traumatic experience without a support staff that's second to none. And John was just incredible. And what the stuff he said, I know the listeners know what a great guy he is, but when I would send him stuff and he'd reply back, he sent some stuff or some things to read, and I read them and they're fabulous. But I got my scan yesterday, and I'm still cancer-free, thank goodness.
Excellent.
I hope to still be. Today is 1 year from when I was told I was cancer-free, and I'm sorry to bore your seven listeners, but I just wanted to call and let everybody know that, you know, Mason, you're a lost cause. But John is just a great guy, and he's fabulous. And, you know, I, when you come down here, hopefully to see our, you know, that lunch with a mutual friend, John, I hope to see you. But I can't thank you enough. I've spent all day calling friends. I'm going to do it as long as I can. And I'm just grateful. Here I am a year later. My hair's back. My weight's back. I'm just as ugly as ever. And I'm just grateful to be alive. It's tough now. It's tough. You know, I can only imagine what the people on floor 8 West at Hoag Hospital are going through, like I went through now. I'm glad I'm not doing it, but just thank you. And you know, with you guys, I was in the business before, not as much as you, but you know, you put it out there and you have no idea who's listening. If there's 7 or 7 million or whatever, but you know, you guys have been doing this for so long. You made a great impact. You're almost like uncles and brothers and sons and fathers and stuff. And you guys are awesome, and no way to say thank you enough for all you've done and you will do.
Oh, Eric, thank you very much. Thank you for updating us. And most of all, we're glad you're feeling better, and congrats on a year cancer free. That's awesome.
Winning that fight, man.
All right, man.
Thank you. Bye.
Oh, sure. Bye. And he was sending me updates, and it didn't look good for a while. He lost a ton of weight, but he would listen to us every day. He'd like send me notes about stuff we said on the show, and I thought, just hang in there, man. You never know. And that's great news that he's made it for a year. So what was the question Lindsay asked you about us?
She asked, and maybe listeners can help with this. This is always my favorite way to do this. She said, is there a word or two words that describe us? And Lindsay, go into detail what you're actually looking for.
Basically need like a word or two, not a phrase or sentence, but just an adjective to describe you guys in a way that I guess you can, like I'm trying to think, like fun loving, but not so cheesy. Like a descriptive word. Yes, fun loving is way too cheesy. I don't think I would ever use that in any description for anything ever.
Right.
So it's something
it's
like
one,
that. But not
it's
in,
one
you know,
word that describes
or
us.
Or it could be a phrase.
Sure.
Yeah, okay.
But it needs to be complimentary.
Okay. At LA Ireland, at Venice Mace, a word, words, or phrase that describe me and John. What's this going to be used for?
It's just for a like a description. You know, I when I send out emails to people that I want to have as guests on our show,
like Mason and Ireland have been described as like the two ones that popped into my head. You, Mace, you and I would be proud of this, but it's not what Lindsay needs. We are inexplicably curious.
Okay, yeah, that's
true. Like the things that are interesting to us are almost unexplainable. I mean, we could get fascinated by a thing that's completely stupid and useless to another person.
I would totally agree with that phrase. But I'm looking for something more that like describes the two of you like on the air in the show, I guess.
Okay. All right, let me give it some thought.
Okay.
And we'll see. We should be able to come up with something.
Yeah.
The word I came up with was winsome.
Winsome?
But I'm not going to use it because I don't.
It's a terrible word.
Yeah.
Right.
But that
was the word that I was using to prompt you guys with.
A period novel?
That's why I said I'm not using it.
I thought of the movie I used to give you guys to compare to. Mason, when she said that, I thought of the movie Emma, which is not
Emma.
Good.
Those guys are so winsome. Yeah. All right. If you got an idea, at LA Ireland, at Venice Mace, help Lindsay out. She needs a word or words or a phrase that describe me and John. Also coming up for you, what Jared Dudley said on his Zoom conference call today about the returning of the potential return of the NBA potentially to Disney World, as we've been talking about all afternoon. Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN. Okay, so I promised, there are very funny words coming in to describe me and John, but we promised that we would do some of this Jared Dudley sound. Jared Dudley did a Zoom conference call today about the potential return of the NBA, and we played a little bit of it earlier in the show, but there's some really good stuff here. Here he is on the biggest challenge that you face once you get back to playing.
Limit Jimmy and Thomas, 6 weeks. We're not going to have that. I mean, you want me to go into the practice facility, but I can't get the adequate rhythm and timing if I can't even play pickup. Most athletes get in shape by playing. It's like a runner telling a runner she can't run outside and be able to get ready for a race. So for us, you need that time for that. And so that's where it's not necessarily who's going to be the best team, it's who's going to be the healthiest team. And that's why the training staff, teams that have the best training staff, is a huge advantage. And so when we get the go from the league and we have, okay, from June 1st to maybe July 10th, and you got your four and a half weeks, how do you ramp up? So training camp, can't do two-a-days. You can't risk injuries. It's more maybe two or three days on, one day off, building and getting your muscles prepared to be able to push off. And then maybe that week three, get a hard week three, and then slowly decline before these games. And so you're right, it's going to be difficult. Players haven't really talked about that. I think they're just more interested in getting back in. And once we get back in, it'll be more of the training staff and coaching staff relaying that message, and Braun and AD letting them know how their body feels. And it's going to be a huge total group effort when it comes to that.
So, yeah, that's in line with what Momo said to us earlier, that we're looking at like building in 4 to 6 weeks to get ready from the time everybody gets there and they're cleared to train fully. It's about 4 to 6 weeks until go time, which is, again, tracking with what Momo said. Here he is on what will happen if another NBA player tests positive.
I'm not a doctor, but what I've been hearing for the whole time is the 14-day quarantine. And so I don't know if that has changed to 10-day. And you're right. And that's where the big protocol, that's what you're waiting for June 1st. If someone, listen, Adam Silver, I'm not making any of this up. All I heard, Adam Silver says, if a COVID-19 test is going to stop this, you know, league from returning, then we shouldn't even start. He knows someone's going to test positive. So you're right. There'll be a protocol for that. It'll be quarantine. I can't see it'll be extra testing because we're going to get tested before every game. And so that's where the responsibility comes for us. It's sometimes it's out of our realm, in the sense of, hey, we got to stay within the bubble. Let's do this. Let's just stay isolated. It's going to be hard for 2 months, but it's something we have to sacrifice. And I'm not really sure, but I know you will be quarantined for that time. And let's just be honest, man, 2 weeks, that's the playoffs. I mean, you don't have that. And so it'd be a bummer for not only teams, but for fans of Kawhi, Giannis, LeBron, AD, and they can't play in the playoffs. It's just going to be a real stain. And so it's something that the league's going to have to figure out and relate to us so we can, you know, keep us safe and keep those tests negative as much as possible.
All right. So he also, Mace, talked about something that I've been thinking a lot about. Nobody will have home court advantage.
Right.
I mean, you can say that, you know, for the sake of the box score, that the Lakers are the home team, but everyone would be in the same place and you'd be playing in front of no fans. So here's Dudley on how will you make up for lack of home court in the playoffs.
I think the bench is crucial more now than ever, because it'll be quiet. The communication will be able to talk. I wish we had Cousins back there barking behind us the way he gets after people. But no, it's something for me, Quinn, Rondo, Dwight Howard. You'll hear us. I'm sure we'll be mic'd certain times, and you guys will get an inside treat. But no, I don't think no advantage. I don't think there's advantage. Our advantage is we have LeBron, AD, and you guys. That's our advantage. And so for us, it's to be able to use our size, use our chemistry. No team has an advantage when it comes to that. You're on a neutral side, neutral court. And I prefer that. I like us on neutral courts now. If we would have had the playoffs and be able to play Clippers in the Western Conference Finals for sure. That'd have been seven home games potentially for us and stuff like that. So there could be a disadvantage at times, but no, I don't think extra advantage. And I just think that you'll see our bench acting the same, being hyped up. And I think it'll be kind of cool. You guys might be able to get more sound bites and be able to hear exactly the trash talking and what goes on, and in maybe even the conversations between refs and players. So it's kind of be a unique dynamic, one that might not be better than with fans, but something that you guys will be able to gain more information that you didn't have before.
So we know that the county cleared the Lakers for limited practices at the training facility in El Segundo. Jared has been part of those. Here he is describing what a day is like at the practice facility right now.
Very similar, like if you go to a hospital. It was weird in the sense that you pull up, you obviously get your fever checked, and you expected that of talking to other athletes that have been in China, of when they go into different restaurants, and that could be the new norm in the next couple months till the vaccine hits, asking you basic questions. Have you been around anyone with corona? Do you have any symptoms? Are you been coughing, sneezing, this and this? And it's about 2 minutes. It's really fast. I think the weird thing is slipping off your shoes right before you walk into someone's house. That's how they do it in Black people's household. If you don't want to get on the carpet or whatever. So I think for that, you get your slippers, you walk in, you got to have a mask on in the training room. But once you get to the court, it might look funny with your assistant coach wearing a mask and gloves, but basketball takes over. You're not even thinking about it. I'm not thinking about the 12 feet distance, even though they are. It's for me just to get my workout in and moving, and then I get to the weight room. And in the weight room, I'm not wearing a mask. Both coaches and strength coach are wearing a mask and gloves. They are have stuff under their shoes. It's really attention to detail to that. And then when you go to the training room, your mask has to be on. And when the trainers are working on your body, they have gloves on. So, I mean, if anyone knows the Lakers, they do everything first class. So if you looked at it, it looks different. With the chairs, with the coaches, with the court, but you can tell they put a lot of time and effort in, and the NBA has done everything right for us to be able to get back.
All right. So, by the way, the dings and bells and whistles and stuff was obviously people jumping in and out of that press conference. That must be surreal. And by the way, that's not just Black people's houses that you take your shoes.
I thought my the grandmother, same thing.
my grandmother, man, you did not walk into her house with your shoes on. You left those at the door.
I know a lot of people who are like that.
Yeah. But it must be surreal. Your coach is wearing a mask and gloves as you're at the training facility. Must be really, really weird. A little surreal there. But it sounds like we're moving in the right direction. All right. So I tweeted this out, John. Give us a word or two words that describe me and John. Lindsay suggested winsome. This isn't a period novel.
Yeah, that's what would you no good. Use? Okay. So well, we're getting a lot of good ones. So my friend Mark Hoffman has a good one. He says, irresistibly quirky. That's not bad.
That's
irresistibly
not bad.
Quirky.
That's okay.
Okay. How about this?
Okay.
Unconventional indulgence.
No.
How about weird AF?
Yeah, I don't know if I will really want to send a pitch email to somebody describing you guys as weird AF, right? Not exactly the term of endearment I was looking for, but thank you.
Our friend Lou Riley says, sit-down sports comics. Instead of stand-up sports comics, sit-down sports comics. And Mace, perhaps the saddest but truest one.
Yes.
Nose and forehead.
Yeah. No, the one I love here is fortunate.
That also very true.
Because we absolutely are. Auspicious. Somebody says, this is Corey. I like the word for you guys. You're encouraging and look for what's best and fair. Auspicious.
The Odd Couple, Must Listen, Lovely Forehead, Clever Stoner. That's a little elaborate.
I like that one.
Easily Amused. That's true.
That's perfect. Easily Amused. Lindsay, are we helping you at all?
Nope. I don't think people are getting the assignment of
Dumb and Dumber. What about Dumb and Dumber?
Dumb and Dumber's good.
Guys. A term of an endearment for a professional email.
Yin and Yang. That's a good one.
That's not a term of endearment.
I don't think you guys are yin and yang either.
I think we are.
He
lives in Manhattan Beach. I live in Venice.
Freddie Prinze. You see what Freddie wrote?
No, what'd Freddie say?
Ass hats.
Perfect. I will use that one.
Use
Thank
that
you.
In your next pitch email.
I was wondering if you had time to come on with Mason and Ireland, the asshats of
Dear
Los
publicist,
Angeles.
We would like to invite Mark Wahlberg onto the show. Mason and Ireland are like two asshats. Let me know your availability. Sincerely, Lindsay.
Try that. See if
it's more of like a description, I guess, for the show, and maybe not you two.
Okay.
I'll figure it out.
I think we made some progress with asshats.
Thanks,
all right.
Thanks,
coming up Ray. Next for you. Coming up next for you is 5 o'clock Fast Track. Mason and Ireland, 710 ESPN.